Hello and welcome to Film Weekly. I'm Jason Solomons, and in this edition, we find out more about surprise Oscar nominee Ryan Gosling. As two films are released starring Ryan this week, we talk to his Fracture co-star, the gorgeous Rosamund Pike, and to his half-Nelson director, Ryan Fleck. More American movies this week include Adam Sandler in Rain Over Me and Justin Timberlake in Alpha Dog. There's lots of great music in the movies this week, so we'll be sampling a bit of that and offering you the chance to win two great soundtracks. It's all to come on Film Weekly. Now cast your minds back to the Oscars, and alongside the heavyweight nominees such as Forest Whitaker, Peter O'Toole, Will Smith and Leonardo DiCaprio was a young actor for whom many would be forgiven for going "Who?" when the names were read out. Ryan Gosling burst onto the scene with his blistering 2001 performance in The Believer about a Jewish boy who turned into a Nazi. His Oscar nomination 6 years later was for his performance in Half Nelson, a tiny indie film, more of which later. But proving he can do both cool indie and big-budget studio, Ryan can also be found this week in Fracture, a legal thriller starring Anthony Hopkins and Rosamund Pike. Ryan plays a young lawyer at the DA's office about to go for a glamorous new corporate gig with cool beauty Rosamund when he's called in to prosecute Hopkins. It seems a simple case as Hopkins has already confessed to killing his wife, but there's a glint in Tony's eye, a sort of behind bars Hannibal Lecter type of glint, and Gosling's in for a rougher ride than expected.
I'm not judging you, Willie, no. Anyone coming from what you came from, then paying your way through East Oakey College and Tulsa Law by writing papers for Princeton kids on the internet. My God, $60,000 in debt and 97% conviction rate. Wow. You deserve it, kiddo.
What have you been doing?
Oh, I'm permitted the use of a private investigator.
Not to investigate me.
Why not? You're investigating me.
Because you shot your wife.
Allegedly. That's how it works, right? If I can't introduce something in court as evidence, it doesn't exist legally.
I'm not going to play games with you.
I'm afraid you have to, old sport.
Caught between the two in Gregory Hoblit's film is Rosamund Pike, one of Britain's fastest rising actresses, a former Bond girl who's actually used that gig to spring to greater things rather than slip into the career obscurity that so often swallows them up post-007. Since then, we've seen her on stage as a Hitchcock blonde and on screen as Jane Bennett in Joe Wright's miraculously enjoyable Pride and Prejudice and opposite Johnny Depp in The Libertine. I met up with Roz to talk about Hollywood and Hopkins, Gosling and Gaslight. Rosamund Pike, welcome to the Observer's Film Weekly. How lovely
Thank
to have
you. Thank
you
very much.
You've got a new film out called Fracture and you're with Anthony Hopkins in it. Which, although I don't suppose you spend too much time with him, you're mainly with Ryan Gosling, two Oscar nominees.
I know. It's sort of extraordinary, really, to have the sort of, you know, one of the pinnacles on any actor's sort of chart of what they'd like to do must be to work with Anthony Hopkins. And then I actually get to be in a film with him and I don't do any scenes with him, which is really quite frustrating.
Well, did you get to hang out with him at least?
Yes, I got to sort of spend, you know, and any sort of moment I could seize to talk to him, I'd sort of took with both hands. Like, he's an extraordinary man. He's an inspiration on how to live life as much as he is on how to act. You know, he's certainly an inspiration on how to act, but he's like this kind of Renaissance man at the moment. He's just trying, he's having so much fun. Yeah, he's trying his hand at everything.
He looks like that in the film, actually.
He does.
Like, he's like really enjoying himself, having a bit of a laugh. I mean, it's kind of Hannibal Lecter-ish, of course, and that's the casting, but I mean, he looks like he's just had such a laugh with it. So you think, well, I'm enjoying it if he is too.
Yeah, it's very infectious. You know, and he's directing his first film. He's writing a symphony. He said, I don't really understand music, but I'm just sort of writing things down and I get other people to do it for me. And then I just conduct and it's the LA Philharmonic. And you think, the LA Philharmonic? He says, yes. He says, no. He says, it's very good. I mean, I just, you know, I find it quite interesting. I've got mathematical in my mind. You know, he just has this extraordinary way of talking. His rabbits on. And what's actually coming out is the most extraordinary information.
Do you think he's happy then?
Insanely happy, living this sort of Californian dream. And he's so free as an actor, and he said his secret is just to know something incredibly well. He just reads the script backwards and forwards until he sort of knows all his lines and almost everybody else's. And that makes him, sort of gives him that wonderful sort of freedom, really, when he comes to perform.
Because he didn't come over to London, unfortunately, so why we got you.
Thanks.
But he does look, as you say, to be really enjoying this LA kind of existence, which was so almost the antithesis of Anthony Hopkins before he won the Oscar for Silence of the Lambs, before he became a big movie star. You know, he was kind of here at the National. I grew up kind of watching him and Judi Dench doing, you know, Anthony and Cleopatra at the National. And then suddenly to see this kind of real LA guy, you know, and he's kind of, he gets his top off at one stage and he's quite well, you know, he's in good nick for however old he is.
Oh, yes.
And I just wondered, it just seemed such an odd place for him to be that it also seemed to me quite an odd place for you to be. But you seem to take to it quite well as well.
As an LA, well, it's always been a bit of a fantasy of mine to do a kind of LA thriller. I like those sort of films that are about a kind of very glossy, high-octane LA, like Heat. You know, I think it looks a bit like Heat.
It does, and it's
all this, I think Greg does that so well and does all these reflective surfaces. You've got this incredibly shiny city of shiny cars and shiny floors and shiny windows and everything's got a sort of double image. And I think that's a very good way of filming a thriller. It's a very good setting for a thriller, LA.
And you get to wear lots of elegant dresses and hang out on rooftop pools at parties.
I know. She's a very sort of slick dresser. It's all sort of Manolo Blahnik and suited and booted, but it's tough. You know, it's funny playing a woman like that. Nikki is such a career-driven woman who sort of prioritises ambitious money-grubbing, really, above family and intimacy and all the rest of it. And I find it, I can sort of respect it, but I don't really admire it.
Because, I mean, you're quite good at the icy cool person. I don't think that's very you.
It's funny, maybe it's closer to the bone than I like to think, so I try and steer away from it. But Greg, it's funny, because I always try and humanise people, or I try and sort of look for their weaknesses and their vulnerabilities, and Greg Hoblett was just determined to have this sort of alpha female, and he wanted to see this, what would happen with an alpha female coming up against her sort of, you know, her counterpart, her alpha male counterpart in Ryan Gosling's character, and just the sort of sexual chemistry that would come out of it.
Yeah, quite quickly as well.
Quickly,
she's not that much of an alpha female. She's like, alpha female, oh, I'll still sleep with you. Unless she thought of him as a conquest.
I think she did. I mean, you know, I think she did think of him as a conquest. I mean, I think it was sort of took them both by surprise, really. But she just, you know, I think I have to be suspicious of anyone who tries to hold on to control that much, I think. But actually, we've had most of our love scene cut, actually, because it was considered too distracting. But Greg Hoblett actually said he'd send it to me on a DVD, which I'm not quite sure what I'd do with it.
Come on, grandchildren, let's watch me sleep with Ryan Gosling. Let's talk about Ryan Gosling for a bit, clothed or otherwise, as you wish. Because I do think, I mean, I think it's a terrible, I don't know if it's a happenstance of scheduling, but Half Nelson is out this week, the film for which he was Oscar nominated. So someone somewhere has kind of said, I'm going to crush the little boy and release your big kind of LA starry vehicle, which is a really good, fruity, fun kind of thriller film against this kind of small little indie film for which he got Oscar nominated.
Yeah.
So, you know, you wait 2 years for a Ryan Gosling movie and two come in the same week. But he's got an extraordinary presence. If you spend, you know, as I have done this week, watching his two films almost back to back, he's an extraordinary chemical presence on the screen.
He is. Like it's like it doesn't contain him. It's really nice to see film not contain an actor. You know, somebody asked me a weird question. They said, you know, what about all his facial expressions? I thought, I didn't really notice his facial expressions. And then he said, you know, he twists his face and contorts it into the strangest things. I thought, does he? Not really. I mean, I think it's just, he's just not a vain actor. I think that's the only thing,
isn't it? I think he did this a marvellous bit. And you'd filmed this before he'd got the Oscar nomination.
Yeah.
So what did you think when you found out that he was nominated for an Oscar? Did you think perhaps it was for Fracture?
No, I didn't. I knew it was Half Nelson. He'd just come off Half Nelson at the time, and I knew it was something special, and he was very proud of it, obviously, and proud of the fact they did it for so little money. You know, I think that's so good when something like that happens. It's something that's just, I think they literally did it for kind of nothing. It was made for under $1 million or something.
Yeah, it's
the whole
amazing
film.
It's a lovely film. So you're back on stage soon, I noticed, in adverts at the weekend.
I am.
Clutching your hair at Gaffer Gaslight.
Yeah, back trying to follow in Ingrid Bergman's footsteps, but... Yes, another... get back playing a victim. So it's all right that I can get to play some of these power-hungry women, because I've played a... You know, I'm playing all these victims on stage, so I think it's quite good to go and play boss woman as well.
I did report ages ago that you were going to be in it maybe on film, Gaslight.
Oh.
And that Joe Wright, after doing Pride and Prejudice, was going to kind of attack Gaslight.
Yes, I've heard that. That, you know, he is thinking of developing a screen version of Gaslight, but at the moment I've heard nothing about that, so... I'll get on with doing it on stage and then
see
what comes.
So they came across kind of quite independently, just kind of, I'm going
to
do that.
Absolutely. No, it's a play I've always wanted to do. Mm. And I met with Peter Gill, the director, and we kind of talked about doing the idea, and the Old Vic had a slot, and it all just worked out.
So you're in rehearsals right now?
No, just about to start.
Do you enjoy that period?
I love it, but I'm scared of going into it, really scared. I've just heard that Ingrid Bergman spent lots of time in a mental asylum doing research, so I'm wondering whether I should, you know, get my arse over to Bedlam, as it were. But,
well, it's a start coming here to interview by me. I think you passed this test.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. Lovely to see you too.
Rosamund Pike there, co-starring in Fracture, a juicily enjoyable slice of nonsense, stylishly realised by director Gregory Hoblit, who always has his credit sequences with letters that split apart, as if to say, this might look like a boring film, but stuff's going to happen. He did it before in Frequency, and in Fallen with Denzel Washington, and of course in Primal Fear, another courtroom drama, that time with the debut of Edward Norton. Hopkins has a great time here, winking and smiling and lapsing into a silly Irish accent for no reason. Ryan Gosling makes his part very cool and watchable, and Rosamund, in a rather decorative part, is as elegant as a diamond necklace. I enjoyed it, though it's clearly very silly, and the plot twist is so obvious you'll have even dismissed it yourself and started looking for something else a lot trickier. Believe me, it's nothing like that. Ryan Gosling's work in Half Nelson is altogether more satisfying in what is a memorably moody and moving film, one you can't help feeling will be unfairly squished at the box office this weekend by the very presence of Ryan Gosling in Fracture. Anyway, Half Nelson will live a lot longer in the memory of anyone who sees it. Ryan plays a charismatic history teacher in an inner-city school, departing from the syllabus to teach his young pupils about politics, racial history, and the forces of change. They love him, and they respond. He's a much better teacher than Michelle Pfeiffer or Hilary Swank, and, here's real praise, he's even cooler than Samuel L. Jackson in either Coach Carter or 187. But out of school, Ryan likes to get off his face on crack. His apartment's a mess, his love life's in tatters, and he's a bit behind with the old marking. His credit cards are maxed out and useless, except for cutting lines of cocaine. One night, he decides to smoke a rock in the school toilets, but a pupil, played by Sharika Epps, finds him on the floor. The pair become friends, bound by secrecy. Skillfully, debut director Ryan Fleck builds his story, neatly trapping Gosling in the walls of his institution, while the kids hear about race riots, the man, and society's machines. There are subtle evocations of hereditary addictions when Gosling visits his drunken father, as well as cycles of ghetto life as the young girl visits her brother in jail and is looked after by a local drug dealer. Buoyed by a classy soundtrack featuring broken social scene, Half Nelson is a cool, atmospheric and touching study about connection, addiction and education. I met up with the startlingly young team who made their debut with it, Ryan Fleck and Anna Bowden. I'm with Ryan Fleck and Anna Bowden, the producer and director and team, basically, behind one of my favourite films of the year so far, Half Nelson, starring Ryan Gosling. Guys, congratulations on that film. It's a breath of fresh air. It snuck up on me at the London Film Festival last year, and I'm delighted to see that that it's doing so well for you. And it got an Oscar nomination for your lead guy. What did you feel when you heard that?
It was very exciting. Because not just because it gratifies your ego on some level, but because it means that a lot more people are going to see the movie who ordinarily would never know about it. So that was very exciting.
And has that happened? Have you actually seen the numbers kind of increase? Because it was probably not on release in the States when the nomination came through.
Yeah, I mean, the theatrical run was over, but it was about to come out on DVD. So I think the sales for the DVD and the rentals especially have been very good.
I mean, Ryan Gosling is tremendous in the film. It surprised me when he got an Oscar nomination, not because he wasn't kind of, you know, good enough for it, but just that the Academy had actually seen the film, for Christ's sakes.
I know a lot of people, after the Academy Award nominations came out, a lot of press in the United States were like, and Ryan Gosling for a movie Half Nelson, I haven't even heard of it. And these are like entertainment people. So that was, it was exciting because it means that now they've heard of it.
They certainly have, and they will have here. Where did you get Ryan Gosling from? Because, I mean, he's kind of the only well-known star of the movie. How did you persuade him to take this? What made you cast him?
We didn't even have to persuade him. We'd written the role for somebody a little bit older and didn't even have him in mind, but he got hold of the script and liked it and said he wanted to meet with us, so we met with him, and you know, we'd seen his movies and thought he was an amazing actor. And when we met with him, he had this great history and he felt older than he was. And we thought, hell, he'll be a young teacher, you know.
Who did you have in mind when you wrote the part?
Mark Ruffalo. How would I say? I mean, we wrote it for somebody in their mid-30s, like Anna said. So we had seen You Can Count on Me, and we thought that was, at the time we were writing, you know, one of our favorite recent movies. We wrote it that long ago. But and they're similar terrain that character goes through. But, you know, it's not like we wrote it for him to play.
Did you ever get to see Ruffalo read the part?
No. I don't know if we ever actually got the script to him. But fortunately for us, Ryan got it very early in the process and liked it.
If Mark's listening, he'll be going, damn, Oscar nomination, that was mine. But, I mean, it is a lovely movie and a lovely performance from Ryan. The textures of both the performance and the movie need to kind of lead one into the other. How much was it your aesthetic and your making, and how much of it did Ryan put in to his performance? I guess I'll ask you, Ryan, A, because you share a name with him, and B, because you were kind of, you know, looking down the lens at him all the time.
Well, you know, the way we make movies is very collaborative with not just the actors, but the crew and everybody down the line. So we're very much interested in what is going on in people's heads and what they want to bring to the movie. And Ryan is a perfect person to work with when you work that way, because he's got a lot of ideas. Most of them are really good. But it's just really fun to be in rehearsal and hear how his brain works. And, you know, and we wrote this script, and he's got ideas that things that we... angles to certain scenes that we've never considered before, and when we get into rehearsal and then you get on set and you see it executed, it's just really exciting to see something that you've created sort of come to life by very talented people.
Yeah, it's enormously thrilling to watch it happen before your eyes as well. I said it's a little surprise of a movie, not in that it's so good, in that its story, its atmospheres, they creep up on you. They kind of seep up on you, and you don't really know what you're watching until you've seen the whole picture.
Yeah, I think it was really exciting to see Ryan inhabit the role, and particularly in his relationship with Sharika, who plays Dre, and the way that they play off each other and the energy that they had between them was really fun to watch.
Tell me about you guys, you two. Where did you meet? How comes you wrote this film together? Because you edited and produced and co-wrote. Mm-hmm. And you directed, co-wrote, made the tea?
Yeah, there was some tea making as well. Yeah, we met in film school. We didn't go to the same school, but we had a mutual friend, and we kind of worked on each other's projects. And
In which town?
In New York. And
you both at NYU?
I was NYU. Anna was at Columbia. And we got along and we started dating and also started making some documentaries together. And the team in a documentary seems a lot more fluid because, you know, you're just capturing stuff as it unfolds. We thought that for the fiction film, our roles should be a little bit more defined, even though we're sort of all doing the same work.
Right. And dating still.
Yes, amazingly.
Congratulations on that. That's what you need an Oscar right there. What I guess I really like about the movie is the photography that's involved, the kind of dreamlike. There's a misty quality to it. There's almost a poetic kind of hazy impressionism to it, if you like. Maybe because we're seeing some of this through the haze of a crack pipe from The Addicted Teacher. But maybe the music and the whole atmosphere which drums up. Just to take me through a bit about the creation of that. I mentioned earlier as an aesthetic, but your cameraman, whose name I forget.
Andrzej Perek.
They're always from Poland, aren't they?
Yeah, he grew up in Minneapolis, but his mom is Ukrainian and his dad is Indian.
Oh, okay.
So
we joke that his name is actually just Andrew, but he changed it so he could sound like a European cinematographer.
You don't get a job as a cinematographer if you're Andrew.
Exactly.
Another contributing factor to the dreamlike quality is the music, which I think is something I always look out for, and I think it's fantastic in your film. I noticed immediately the credit was Broken Social Scene. And when I saw it at the London Film Festival, I ran out and got that Broken Social Scene album. But most of all those tracks weren't on there. Tell me about the compiling a soundtrack and getting clearance, because it's a debut film. How do you get clearance from some of those tracks? There's a Billy Bragg track in there too.
Well, you get a good music supervisor and good producers who are going to work hard for you. We had a few songs that we really wanted, but, you know, the majority of the soundtrack is Broken Social Scene, and it's existing music by them, and we had been listening to their music while we were writing the script. It was just so part of the way we envisioned the film, and we didn't necessarily even think we were going to use it, but it just became so much part of the emotional life of the film for us, and we ended up playing it on set for a couple scenes that didn't have dialogue, just to set the mood for the actors, and then we were editing to it, and at some point we're like, we should really call them up and get their permission to use this stuff. So
who are they for music purposes? I don't know them.
An indie rock band from Canada.
Sometimes they finish each other's sentences or start them.
They're like a super collective. They have several different kind of bands from Toronto. Members of several different bands get together and they make this kind of amazing music that was really inspiring to us, and we were really lucky to have them respond to the film and let us use their music for, you know, much less than it's worth.
I mean, you have to start begging at a certain point, you know. I mean, fortunately, they liked the movie when we showed them, and I think they were really flattered by the fact that we used a lot of their music in the movie, and
You showed them a cut without any music and sort of said, we'd love to use such and such a track here? Or
No, we put it in there. You know, we bought their albums and we put all their music in there wherever we wanted it, and they saw it and they were kind of blown away. I think they were partly offended that we thought we could get all that music for such an insanely low amount of money, but they were also flattered that they liked the movie, and so we got very lucky that they responded to the movie.
They got my £7 extra from having seen your movie. I went out and bought their album, so there they go. It's already payback time.
Yeah.
they claim that it's made no difference, but I think that if people keep speaking up and telling the truth that they're going out and buying the albums because of the movie, then they'll come around.
You hear that, Kevin Drew?
But you have a soundtrack album to go with it too, right?
Yeah, we only used a few songs of theirs. We didn't put all of their music on the soundtrack album. We have a lot of other music, like you mentioned, the Billy Bragg song, and there's this great song off of the Free to Be album. Did you guys have that out here? Free to Be, You and Me?
Yeah.
I mean, that was a really important album for us when we were growing up, and you know, there's some hip hop on there, and some good.
I shall be getting this album straight away. It's like someone will be delivering it to us right now.
It's alright to cry. Crying gets the sad out of you. It's alright to cry. It might make you feel better. Rain drop from your eyes, washing all the mad out of you. Rain drops from your eyes, it's gonna make you feel better. It's alright to feel things, though the feelings may be strange. Feelings are such real things, and they change and change and change. Sad and grumpy, down in the dumpy, snuggly, huggly, mean and ugly, sloppy, slappy, hoppy, happy. Change and change and change.
It's competition time. Last week, you might remember, we were out and about at the new BFI South Bank, and we wanted from you suggestions for seasons they could put on at the new BFI South Bank. We had floods of suggestions coming in, including some that had already been done by BFI South Bank. Says Peter Quinn in Derry, oh, could they consider a season of classic westerns? Well, they have, Peter, and they did that last year. He says also, could there be a season of John Cassavetes films? Well, yes, there can be, and it's going to be there in June. So you're being very prescient there, Peter, but I'm afraid you can't win because you've already kind of predicted what's going to be happening down there. So our two choices for winners come from John Perring, who this week emails in and says, thank you for encouraging me to think of some great movies. I spent the last hour or two coming up with this. My suggestion for a BFI season would be modernist architecture in film, due to its location at the brutalist South Bank. Often the architecture outshines the stars. He says films that could be included are Mon Oncle, the Jacques Tati film, Metropolis, with those great sets from the 20s. He says Gattaca has loads of Frank Lloyd Wright scenery. Heat had some great LA downtown minimalist architecture. Get Carter, The Italian Job, North by Northwest, 2001, Alphaville, Renaissance, and the documentary My Architect. I think it's a really good idea, John. I've passed it on to the BFI, and they're considering it even as we speak. You are one winner, and our second winner is from Will in Cork in Ireland, who says, my suggestion for a BFI season actually came to me during your interview with Danny Boyle, Jason. Danny gave me the idea. He mentioned how different the view of London was in the sequel 28 Weeks Later, created by Juan Carlos Fresnadillo. So, says Will, I thought about a season of an outsider's view of the UK, but filmed in the UK. So that's directors from outside the UK working in London. So you can have Antonioni, you can have Fresnadillo. Great idea for a season, Will, and congratulations to you. Will does say, unfortunately, I do live in Cork, so I'm not sure if I can use the tickets for the BFI South Bank season. Maybe I can get a second place if I win. Well, you can win, but you also get mugs, and there's loads of BFI memorabilia on its way to you if you can't use those tickets for the season. But anyone can go down to BFI South Bank and experience the joys of it, as we did last week here on Film Weekly. This week we've got music for you. As you heard earlier, Broken Social Scene did some great music for Half Nelson, but the soundtrack also includes tracks from people like Billy Bragg and his version of New England, Baby Black and King Honey, a great rap tune called Just Begun, and the Marshall Tucker Band's Can't You See. That soundtrack's up for grabs, as is a hip-hop collection from Alpha Dog, a film we're about to review here on Film Weekly. You got tunes from Ava Cassidy in there, not so hip-hop that one, and Tech N9ne, as well as Loud and Lawrence Faljean. Nice hip-hop tunes there. So you got two soundtracks, sort of Half Nelson and Alpha Dog. All you have to do this week is tell us, in an amalgam of those themes, your favourite school movie or high school movie. Answers to podcasts@observer.co.uk. That's podcasts@observer.co.uk. Your favourite high school or school movie could win you the soundtracks to Broken Social Scene's Half Nelson or Alpha Dog. Playing like an episode of The OC on crack, Alpha Dog is a reconstruction of a real-life murder that took place among bored white rich kids in California. A 15-year-old boy is kidnapped by a gang and taken to Palm Springs for the weekend. These being young party animals, the hostage actually has a great time, smoking weed, hanging out in amazing houses and flirting with girls. However, things turn serious when the hostage's nutcase older brother swears vengeance on the gang, and they have to decide what they're going to do with their new hostage and friend. Directed by Nick Cassavetes, son of John Cassavetes and Jenna Rowlands, Alpha Dog features lots of young stars, including Justin Timberlake, who's not a bad actor, Ben Foster, who's an extremely good actor, Bruce Willis, Harry Dean Stanton, and Sharon Stone in a fat suit. Set to a banging hip-hop soundtrack, it features some great dialogue, good swearing, and focuses on a youth culture that's obsessed with gangster rap glamour. These bum-fluffy kids are remarkably rude to their parents and flabbergastingly wealthy. Little brats, all of them, I say, but it all makes for entertaining viewing amid the flip social commentary, something we saw recently in Barbara Coppola's Havoc with the topless Anne Hathaway, or, most memorably, in Larry Clark's Bully. Finally out this week is Rain Over Me, the second serious film from Adam Sandler after 2002's Punch Drunk Love. Sandler co-stars with the excellent Don Cheadle as a former New York dentist driven to semi-madness after his family die in one of the 9/11 planes. Cheadle, also a successful dentist, spots his dishevelled former roommate in the street and befriends him, jamming with him, playing video games, and even riding on the back of his motorised scooter. As he tries to help Sandler recover his life, Cheadle's own miseries are thrown into relief as he ponders his stagnating marriage to Jada Pinkett Smith, his attraction to Liv Tyler's pretty shrink, and a lawsuit from a sexually forward patient played by Saffron Burrows. Written and directed by Mike Binder, this is an unusually sensitive buddy comedy. We see New York laid out as if in the dentist's chair itself, in all its self-medicating, therapy-obsessed, cosmetically enhanced lawsuit-filing glory. This is ultimately a comedy about communication and healing and families, which all sounds rather sappy, and on occasions it is, because Binder doesn't quite seem to know when to bring things to a close. But I liked its threads of writing and its themes, and I liked its performances. I also like the use of music, from The Pretenders to Bob Seger, Jackson Browne and Bruce Springsteen. I even liked Adam Sandler. Maybe it's me who needs therapy. That's about it for another edition of Film Weekly. I've been Jason Solomons. Film Weekly was produced by Paul Noble, and next week we'll be back with our skinheads and DMs as we do a special profile of Shane Meadows, hooked to his new film, This Is England. Until then, happy viewing. I'm taking a ride with my enemy and I, as we getting high, watching days go by, looking at my life and all the struggles I survive. My enemy and I doubt to ride till we die. Come and take a ride with my enemy and I, as we getting high, watching days go by, looking at my life and all the struggles I survive.